Turn to Matthew chapter 5. Every time I go through the Sermon on the Mount, I'm impressed with how relevant this passage is, especially chapter 1. You know, if we could deal with the things in this chapter, anger, lust, broken marriages, dishonesty, and retaliation against our enemies. Those are the big issues that have the whole society in disarray. And Jesus just simply puts it where it is, that these can and must be dealt with in God's kingdom if we're to give a different picture than what the world is used to. We'll be looking at verses 33 through 37. In 1994, President Clinton saw the threat of nuclear weapon development in North Korea. And in that year, he struck a deal with Kim Jong-il, who was the father of Kim Jong-un, that they would give North Korea $4 billion over 10 years to freeze the development of their nuclear weapons program, and they would dismantle everything they had already developed, and it would be used for nuclear reactors for the power they needed for electricity. We gave them two nuclear reactors and billions of dollars in aid, and they promised to let the international community send inspectors to make sure they kept their agreement. That never happened. And in 2002, 8 years later, the North Koreans admitted that they had violated this deal from day one. They never kept any part of it. And here we are today. I don't understand why people continue to put confidence in people like that. They'll deal with the Palestinians who just right up front have never denied that their main goal is to completely obliterate Israel. But they'll keep dealing with them. And they'll keep making treaties and promises. I don't understand it. This that I just said to you is one of the countless tragedies in human history because of broken promises. But what about ordinary people? These are leaders. Well, in their book, The Day That America Told the Truth, two authors interviewed thousands of people, and they came up with some calculations that 91% of Americans admitted that they lie on a regular basis. That only 2 in 3 Americans believe that lying is not always wrong. And only 31% of Americans believe that honesty is the best policy. Now, those are pretty dismal figures. And I had personal experience with this when I sold the ice cream truck. As we were walking into the office, well, we'd already agreed that we'd sell the truck. I forget, was it $4,500? I asked him, and he agreed to buy it. And as we were walking into Sullenberger's, he said, "Now, you're going to tell her," and I forget the figure he gave, but it was a much lower figure, that's the sale price. And I knew what he was getting at, because you pay tax on the sale price. And I said, "No, we're not going to do that." And he got a little hot under the collar. So I sat down, and I was a little surprised when I gave the figure, that the $4,500 figure. She looked at me and she said, "Are you sure that that's the figure you want to write down?" She knew that people lie about it, and she was expecting me to, and she was encouraging me to. I couldn't believe it, the accountant. And so I told her, "Yes, that's the price." And then I turned to him and said, "I'll pay you the difference in the sales tax." So that's how we finally settled it. Churchill said, "Some truths are so precious that they must be guarded by lies." That's your politician. They really do believe there's some things that where the truth is so important that you have to guard it with lies. Well, someone has said it this way. God cannot lie, and He will not delegate to us the privilege of lying for Him. I thought that was a pretty good statement. A little boy one time was sent by his mother to purchase a 65-cent loaf of bread. And while the baker was putting the bread into the bag, the little boy said, "That looks like an awfully small loaf for 65 cents. Oh, the baker said, "You'll have less to carry." So after the bread was in the bag, the boy put 50 cents down on the calendar, and the baker said, "You're 15 cents short." And the little boy said, "Well, you'll have less to count." So everybody's story has to be tested. There has to be some way to guarantee that people who are prone to lying and make lots of excuses for it, that somehow there has to be a way to make sure in this very important case they're telling us the truth. So various efforts have been made to do that. The story is told of four college boys on their way to take an exam, and they got sidetracked by some interesting activity and they didn't get to the exam. And so the next day, they said to the teacher, "Honestly, we tried to make it, but we had a flat tire." Oh, the teacher said, "Well, that happens to people. Sure, I'll let you take the test now. But I want one of you to sit in that corner and that corner and that corner and that corner." And after they were seated, he said, "Now, before you take the test, I have a special question, an extra credit question for each of you to answer on the top of your paper. Which tire was flat?" Seriously. Lying can happen even in the church. A pastor once told his congregation, "I want all of you I'm going to preach next Sunday on Mark 17. I'm going to preach next Sunday on Mark 17, and I want all of you this week to read Mark 17. So when he got up to preach the next Sunday, he said, "Now how many of you have read Mark 17? And most of the hands went up. And then to their great consternation, he said, "Mark only has 16 chapters. And it can even be worse than that. A certain evangelist did what evangelists often do, and I think most of them are honest. I mean, I'm not here disparaging any evangelist that ever did what I'm going to say. He asked everybody to close their eyes. And then he asked people to raise their hand if they had a special problem in their life that whatever. And then he started saying, "Yeah, I see your hand. I see your hand. I see your hand." See, that encourages people to get their hands up. But there was one brother sitting in the audience who didn't close his eyes. And he reported afterward that not a single hand went up. We're getting it closer and closer here now. What about us? What about that book you promised to return at a certain time? Did it get returned at the time you said you were going to return it? What about that debt that you owe and you promised to make a payment every month? Does it get paid? I would think that those two questions probably we do pretty well on. But here's one that really, really, really often convicts me. How many of you ever promised to pray for somebody? And you didn't. Maybe you prayed once, but you gave the impression you were going to hold them up in prayer. How many times have you shown a false humility? Somebody tried to compliment you on something. You said, "Oh, well, it was nothing." But boy, you really felt good about the compliment. Or what about that high-sounding spiritual rationalization you had for something you did that you knew down deep in your heart you did for other reasons that would not have been as appreciated if you had actually told why you did what you did. Truthfulness to me, and I think to Jesus, is the virtue on which all other virtues stand. We were dealing with it in Sunday school. If we could be absolutely honest about ourselves, we would make tremendous progress spiritually. The first sin, by the way, was caused by a lie. So God wrote requirements into His Ten Commandments. There are actually two commandments in those Ten Commandments that have to do with honesty. The one is Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. What you say about your neighbor is supposed to be scrupulously true. And then the other one is, commandment 3, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Now, some people think that means swearing, saying bad words. But the Jews always understood that to mean that you invoke God's name for something and then you don't carry through, which we're talking about oaths. Okay? In this commandment, God anticipated that dishonest men would try to shore up their words by getting him involved in their contracts. God anticipated that. So what is an oath? An oath is a promise made in with invoking God's involvement in it, somehow by something you say, with the idea that he will punish you if his name is used in vain, because that's what he said in this verse. He said, if you take the Lord's name in vain, you will be punished, or he won't hold you guiltless. There'll be consequences if you take God's name in vain. So he realized that men were going to pick up on that, and they were going to say, well, this is a way that I can be sure that someone's going to believe me. I'm going to say, in the name of God, this is the truth. And so he said, you make sure that when you do that, that you realize that if you don't keep it, you will be punished. So I have had 3 points here this morning. Number one, I will put this here so it doesn't get used again. Number one, swearing permitted. Well, this marker isn't too good either. And that's verse 33. Whoop. Swearing prohibited. Five, 34 to 36. And swearing precluded. That means done away with, or overshadowed by something else. So those will be our points this morning. So let's talk about swearing permitted. God permitted it, but he gives some very serious warnings connected with it in the Old Testament. He says in Numbers 30, verse 2, if a man vow a vow unto the Lord, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. The psalmist weighs in on this issue. Who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? He that speaketh truth in his heart. He that sweareth to his own hurt. Oh, I shouldn't have made that oath. And he follows through. A good example of this, of course, is Jephthah. And the Bible doesn't condemn Jephthah. There's a lot of discussion as to what actually happened there. But the Bible, one thing the Bible doesn't do, it does not condemn him for keeping that awful oath that he made. However, it was carried out. And the Jews, because of these statements, took honesty very seriously. The conservative Jews, we had these two rabbis last week, the last time I preached, Shammai, who was very conservative on the issue of divorce and remarriage, and basically said the same thing that people say New Testament people can do. And one of my points was, if they're going to say that there's an exception, then they're just saying the same thing Shammai said, because that was the exception he gave. He was a conservative, and then there was the liberal Hillel. The people in the school of Shammai said things like this. 4 persons are shut out from the presence of God. The scoffer, the hypocrite, the liar, and the retailer of slander. The scoffer, the hypocrite, the liar, and the slanderer. Here's another one. One who has given his word and changes it is as bad as an idolater. That's how strongly your conservative Jewish people took what Jesus, what God had said about telling the truth. Now, David Brousseau, in one of his books, described how this worked. I'm just going to read it. For example, let's suppose Levi Bar-Joseph of the first century of Judah goes to the market to buy a ring. He sees a beautiful gold ring that he would like to own, but it's quite expensive. It's worth the price, the merchant is asking, if it is truly solid gold. So he asks the merchant, is this solid gold? Yes, it is, replies the merchant, pure gold. Levi replies as he fingers the ring, are you sure? Of course I'm sure. But are you absolutely sure? Yes, I'm absolutely certain. I personally know the artist who made the ring, and he has assured me that it's pure gold. The merchant calmly assures Levi. Levi is still suspicious. He knows he can't trust even his fellow Jew. So he holds the ring lightly in his hand in an attempt to assess its weight. He scrutinizes the ring carefully for any scratches that might reveal a base metal underneath. At last, he feels pretty confident that the ring is pure gold. But he's still not absolutely positive. So finally, he says to the merchant, I want you to swear by the temple that this ring is solid gold and not merely gold-plated. The merchant makes the oath the Levi requires. Now Levi can buy the ring without too much worry. No God-fearing Jew would swear by the temple if he were telling a lie. I want you to notice something about this story. He doesn't bring God's name into it. And Jesus doesn't say that here. He says nothing about involving God. And there's a reason for that. The Jewish people were really, really careful how they used the name of God because of that statement that they shouldn't take his name in vain or they'll be held guilty before God. In fact, I have a friend, Mordecai, who calls me on the phone occasionally. He's a Jew, and we have very, very good discussions, and sometimes we have email exchanges or text exchanges, and he always spells God this way. And first time I saw that, I looked at it and thought, yep, there it is. A God-fearing Jew is very careful how he uses the name God. So a whole system developed about things related to God. So you're in the first place, the first thing that happened with this whole concept is you remove yourself directly from getting God involved. So you're going to get the temple involved, and you see the other things they listed there. That's interesting to me. They began to swear by things related to God, and things went downhill from there. Just like things always go downhill. I told you that on the subject of divorce and remarriage, because they began to expand that exception, things got to the place where you could divorce a woman for any reason. And the same thing has happened today. As soon as the permanence of marriage was relaxed, it all went downhill, and we're just about the same place where the Jews were, maybe even worse. And the same thing happened with swearing. Once they removed themselves one step from God and started swearing by things related to God, rather in relation to God himself, out of respect for his name, see, this is pure legalism, things went downhill. Jesus came into a world of complicated swearing. If men swore by the temple, it was nothing. If they swore by the gold in the temple, then the oath was binding. If they swore by the altar, it was nothing. But if they swore by the gift to God that was on the altar, the vow had to be fulfilled. They had completely lost sight of the ideal. They were not focused now on honesty. They were only focused on whether they could make an oath that they would not be held accountable for if they broke it. That's all they were interested in. They weren't adjusting their speech to the oath. They were adjusting the oath to the speech. And Clarence Jordan has a rather humorous description of how this worked. They admitted that an oath should be binding. But then they said that it should be no more binding than the thing sworn by. In other words, if your words should be dependent upon your collateral. If you swore by something trifling, such as the hair on your head, of course your oath would not be as binding as if you swore by your whole head. And if you swore by the earth, which is merely God's footstool, it wasn't nearly as serious as swirling by heaven, which is where his throne was. Now, the main point they said was not to overswear. That is, to swear by something bigger than the oath required. Always try to get the one to whom you swear to accept as little collateral as possible so as to reduce the minimum binding effect of the oath. Isn't this just so human, Brother Harvey? And we still play those same games today in every spiritual area if we're not honest. Thus, a law that was designed to encourage truthfulness actually encouraged lying. What an irony. So Jesus came into this situation and he just cut through all that stupidity and he just prohibited swearing at all. He knew that the oath established a double standard. There's where the problem is. This is the way people usually live. If they swear an oath, then they will live by a different standard in the statement they're going to make. I mean, it just encouraged. If you weren't swearing an oath, well, then everybody knew you weren't going to be telling the truth, so it didn't matter. E. Stanley Jones said it this way, and this is what Jesus understood. A good man does not need an oath, and a bad man will not heed an oath. Voltaire said of Penn's treaty with the Native Americans, he says it was the only treaty in history that was not sworn to. And it was the only treaty in history never broken by the man who signed it. Now his sons broke it, but Penn never broke that treaty. You don't need, here's the reality. You don't need an oath to bring God into your transactions. He's already there. He's already in everything you say, or he's already present and involved in everything that you're doing. But just like the Jews, and just like people do on every thing that Jesus said pretty much, we have to compromise. Dietrich Bonhoeffer gives an eloquent defense for the non-swearing of oaths. And then he twists himself into a logical pretzel explaining why it is necessary to swear oaths in civil courts. William Barclay, a commentator I appreciate in many ways, does the same thing. He starts off after he's explained thoroughly Jesus' complete prohibition of swearing oaths. Then he says this dumb statement. But what is the problem with an oath if you plan to keep it? And then he does this. Turn to Matthew 26. I want you to see this. I never cease to be amazed at what people do with the Bible. Matthew 26, verse 53. No, wait, I'm in the wrong. 63. Sorry, I had the wrong verse. Verse 62, and the high priest is during the trial, and the high priest arose and said unto him, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? But Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God. And Barclay says that was an oath. That thou tell us whether thou be the Christ. So he said, Jesus put himself under oath. So under certain circumstances, it's okay. Well, I would observe that I don't think Jesus took that oath. I don't read that he said, yeah, I do that. I adjure myself of the living God. He didn't do it. And besides, if you're going to say that, then Jesus was dishonest. Because he said, don't swear any oath, and then he went and did it himself. Now, we know that's not true. But that's the kind of stuff people do. Let me turn you to some others. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 1. When I was studying this, look, I'm making some pretty strong statements here, but I saw my own heart. I mean, this is just, but except for the grace of God, this is probably one of the most powerful tendencies in human experience. to deny the truth for their own advantage. And people do it little or much. Like I said, exaggeration. And I know when you're telling a story and you want to make it a very interesting story, you just can embellish the details just a little bit. You maybe can even add a detail or two. So easy to do. Sometimes you almost don't realize it till it's over. Well, in this case, 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 23, this is Paul speaking. Moreover, I call God for a record upon my soul, that to spare you I didn't come to Corinth. Is that an oath? It looks to me like he's basically saying, I call God to witness what I'm saying to you. That's a little bit different from saying, I'm calling God as a partner. He's involved with this statement that I'm making. I don't know. Would you turn to Galatians 1:20? These are the passages that Barclay uses to say that it's okay to swear an oath that you mean to keep in a court of law. Galatians 1:20. Paul says, now the things which I write unto you, behold, before God I lie not. You think that was an oath? Again, I see him basically saying, I know God is watching this transaction. I know God is hearing these words that I'm saying. That's basically what I see. And if it is an attempt to do what Jesus said we shouldn't do, Paul, after all, was a human being, and perhaps this is one of the areas where he was still striving to completely attain. I don't know. But if Jesus said, don't swear, you don't go and do this and say, well, this good man, indeed, even Jesus himself, you don't do that. You just don't do that. So Barclay ends by saying, we strive for the ideal, which is not to swear. But man is not good. See, what was in our Sunday school lesson, we had that, didn't we? Man is not good, and the world is not good. And so, in the court of law, we just have to do it to make sure that there's honesty in the court of law. So that's how he compromises. Now, most of you have read The Hiding Place, and one part of that book that always has troubled people is Corey admits there that she lied. Now, you have to think about this. She wasn't lying only for her own advantage, and here's where it really, really gets difficult. She knew that she had, what, 8-10 people in that house, and if she told the authorities a direct answer to their questions, all those people's lives would be sacrificed. And she felt that she just could not do that. She thought, like Winston Churchill said, there's some things that are so important, you have to guard it with lies. But the interesting thing in the book, if you remember, she admits that she had a sister, Betsy, who thought you should always tell the truth. And she did. And Corey admits in the book that somehow her telling the truth was always defended by God. And God took care of the problem when she told the truth. That's interesting. But compromise has gotten us to the same place these people were that we read about in this passage. Let's read it. We didn't even read the passage. Let's read Matthew 5:33-37. Again, ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all. I want to put a little footnote in here. I have a brother-in-law who is deeply critical of Anabaptist thinking, that Jesus changed things in these statements where he said, you've heard that it has been said. He says that's what the Pharisees were saying, and they had compromised. And Jesus is taking them back to the Old Testament law itself. And this is the one I used. I said, where in the Old Testament does it say swear not at all that Jesus is taking them back to? And he said, well, that's a long discussion. We don't have time for that right now. This is not a restatement of the Old Testament law. These are new laws that Jesus is giving, or new commandments. Anyway, I thought I'd give that for what it's worth. So here I was reading. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great king. See, it's this whole graded oath thing that they had going. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black, but let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. But here's what happens. People don't take oaths seriously for two reasons. I mean, in our world, we've seen it on the political scene over the past several years. People just lying, perjuring themselves, and it's known. It's reported that they said this under oath, and it was a lie. All of us are saying, what is going on here? You mean you can lie with impunity? Yes. How many times has a little child said, I cross my heart, I hope to die? They have no belief whatsoever that if they tell a lie, they'll drop dead. They don't believe that. And people don't believe that God's going to do anything either, because they see people lie all the time under oath and nothing happens to them. They don't see anything happening. They perjure themselves and even the law doesn't do anything. So you can lie, God doesn't do anything, you can perjure yourself, the law doesn't do anything, and so we have what we have today. Did Jesus mean what he said? If you turn back to James, James is really emphatic. After speaking on a certain subject, he says, but above all things, swear not at all. Somehow James got the point that Jesus meant what he said and that it was one of the most important things that he said. Is it an impossible standard? Well, we'll have to thank the Quakers. Somehow the people have not recognized us in quite the way they recognize the Quakers, but it is known that the Quakers refuse to swear at all. And it is also known that a Quaker's word could be trusted. Somehow they managed to achieve that reputation. So it is possible to obey what Jesus said and not swear at all and have your words mean what they say. We said it in the Sunday school class, this is impossible without the grace of God. But we have the grace of God. All right? So, we have swearing permitted. It was a total failure. It went down the road that all concessions are made to the telling the absolute truth on the naked word of what people say. So, Jesus prohibited it. And it's clear that he prohibited it, and that the efforts that people have made to compromise on this are specious efforts. There's not reality to them. So, there's a better way. Swearing precluded. I told you the word precluded means stopped or made unnecessary or prevented from happening. And it's just simply to make sure that your yes means yes and your no means no. And that's a lifetime struggle. But you take that as the ideal to which Jesus said you can truly press toward and experience that ideal, I would say, in ever-increasing measure. I can name you some people that lived in this community that if you'd have ever found out they said anything false, you'd have been shocked. They had such a reputation for being scrupulously honest. And so they give the lie to the idea that that God can't work this virtue out in your life. You know, Jesus simplified all of life. Evil is complicated. Evil is complicated. If you lie, you've got to remember what lie you told so that you can tell another lie to cover it up, and then you've got to remember both lies so you can, you see what happens. Good is simple. It doesn't have to do any conniving. It doesn't have to do any remembering. It doesn't have to do any covering up. It doesn't have to do any rationalizing. It's just straightforward and frank. Just tells it like it is. Jesus said to Nathanael one time, behold an Israelite in whom is no guile. When I read that, I think he must have thought most of them were filled with guile. But here was one. Here was one that had no guile. Behold this man.
And then what did he say to him? Nathaniel, you're going to see the heavens opened. I like that. Do you want to see the heavens opened? Do you want to be like Corey Boom's, Ten Boom's sister Betsy? To see God intervene? You know, people are always saying, well, where are the miracles today? And I say, well, if you would really live what Jesus says, you would see some miracles because you would have to see some miracles. Jesus is calling us to a life that's impossible, that's filled with all kinds of hazards unless He is there to intervene and protect and help. It's interesting to me that science cannot make any progress unless it is scrupulously honest. Now, evolution is not science. That's philosophical speculation. I'm talking about science in the laboratory. You've got to tell it exactly like it is. If you try to fudge the facts, you will make no basic discovery. You've got to tell exactly what you saw. You've got to proceed perfectly on the factual information that you get from science if you're going to make any progress. In fact, Johns Hopkins University, they say over one of the entrances to the university, I never saw this, but they say that one of the entrances has this written over it. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Walter Scott says, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we study to deceive. In fact, Nietzsche, that awful philosopher that basically gave the philosophy behind all the awful stuff that happened in Europe, did make this comment to somebody. The worst part about is not that you lied to me. The worst part is I can no longer trust you. That's the tragedy. Not the tragedy that you lied, but the tragedy you completely destroyed trust. And all human relationships are based on trust. Words depend on character. And oaths cannot compensate for a poor character. You can try as hard as you want to shore up your words once people know you're a liar. And you will not succeed. But the good news is if Jesus says, swear not at all, but say yes and no, then it's possible to do that. And I'm going to take that as my challenge. I'm going to take that as the challenge that God does not ask us to do things that He will not help us do. And this is a hard one. So, let's take seriously what Jesus said. Swear not at all. Let's not start down these roads. We had the one on divorce and remarriage. Now we have it on this one. And they all lead to the same end. They all lead to finally unrestricted, unrestrained license. And nobody can trust anybody, and you can't trust your marriage partner, you can't trust what anybody says. It's just an awful thing when this happens. I'm going to conclude by reading an abbreviated version of that wonderful story that Wendell read to us the other Sunday night. This was told by Ravi Zacharias. It'll just be a reminder. You've heard this before. In 1971, Ravi Zacharias had the opportunity to go to Vietnam and carry out a ministry there. During his time there, he traveled with a young Vietnamese man named Hien, who was his interpreter. They became good friends during that time. 4 years after Ravi's visit to that country, Vietnam fell to the communists and Hien was arrested. Over the course of years, he was sent to prison several times under the accusation of having helped the Americans, although he had no official or military responsibilities. During his time in captivity, the prison guards attempted to brainwash him into accepting Marxism and rejecting Christianity, to which he clung. Hien became very discouraged, and yet the Lord intervened powerfully in his life and brought him out of that dark, depressing place. Through providential circumstances, Hien was released from the prison camp. He promptly began to make plans to escape from the country. After several unsuccessful attempts, he began to build a boat in secret. About 53 other people planned to escape with him, and Hien was taking the lead. All was going according to plan until a short while before the date of their departure when four young Viet Cong knocked on his door. When he opened it, they accosted him and said they heard he was trying to escape. Is it true? We have our sources. Hien immediately denied it and went on to distract them with some concocted story to explain his activities. You see, he knew that those 53 people were depending on him. See, that's what really makes it difficult. Apparently convinced, they reluctantly left. Heen was relieved but very disappointed with himself. Here I go again, Lord, trying to manipulate my own destiny. Too unteachable in my spirit to really believe that you can lead me past any obstacle. He made a promise to God, fervently hoping God wouldn't take him up on it. He prayed that if the Viet Cong were to come back again, he would tell them the truth. Resting in the comfort of that impossibility, he was thoroughly shaken when only a few hours before they were to set sail, the four men stood at his door once more. We have our sources, as we said, and we know that you are trying to escape. Is it true? What should Heen do? Amazingly, they showed up. He resignedly gave his answer. Yes, I have plans to escape with 53 others. Are you going to imprison me again? There was a pronounced pause, and then they leaned forward and whispered, no, we want to escape with you. In an incredibly complicated plan of escape, all 58 of them found themselves on the high seas, suddenly engulfed by a violent storm. Heen fell with his face in his hands, crying out to God, did you bring us here to die? As he concluded his story, he said, Brother Robbie, if it had not been for the sailing ability of those four young Viet Cong, we all would have perished. So let's obey Jesus. Let's be promise keepers. That's the title of this message, promise keepers, with no need for an oath. Let's develop a character that will gain far greater trust than any oath that anybody could possibly swear. Does anybody have any comments?